Doug Osher, he's always making me work. He's here and he's ready to go, so he wants to talk to you at 866-391-1020. 866-391-1020. Got a guest coming up for a couple of segments as well, but hey, fall planning, it's all about your lawn. It's all about that outdoor living that you enjoy this time of year because of the fall foliage and the cooler temperatures. And yeah, a little bit of rain from Mother Nature always goes a long way anytime, but especially during the fall planting season. So give us a call, 866-391-1020, DougOster.com. You can always stay in touch with whatever he's doing throughout the week when he's not here. And also, if you're the 10th caller right now, what a beautiful place to be this time of year, any time of year, but especially in the fall. Sorgles, you're going to get a $25 gift certificate. 412-922-1020 wins it. Here he is, the star of the show, Mr. Doug Osher. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning. Boy, we could use some rain still. We've talked about it the last few weeks that we're still in drought. So,
How can we still be in drought? I don't understand.
It's because we don't get any rain.
I've been getting a lot of rain, but I guess maybe what my rain
is spotty.
Yeah.
You know, we need a slow couple days of
a little downpour.
Yeah, drizzling. I can't believe yesterday I was still watering containers. I still have all my tender annuals are still there. I haven't picked all my tomatoes yet. Usually by this time, I was thinking about it because, you know, these cold nights, they're not going to be happy. But I guess if it's not going to frost, so we got like 75, 76 degrees coming up, maybe Tuesday. I can't believe it. My impatience, my begonias, all that stuff is out there. I was watering containers. I just got more watering to do today. So let's start off, though, with our third and final $100 gift certificate, courtesy of flowerbulbs.com. The gift certificate is good for ordering bulbs. And all you have to do is go to DougOster.com, click on the contact button, put something, I want to win the bulbs or bulbs. And I count up how many I get, you know, whether it's 100, and then I throw that into a random number generator, whatever the number is, I count down, and that is the winner, and you should be planting bulbs. I always say, go to your local nursery first, see what they have, but I love this one place. It's called Old House Gardens, and it's filled with heirloom bulbs, and I loved all the stories on them, and they're different, and I'm only buying 3 or 4 or 5 of each little thing that I want. And I put them in the vegetable garden or somewhere where I really know where I'm going to remember where they are and what they are when they come up. But they have a big sale going on, and some of the stuff's half price. And it's just like, I ordered 3 different types of heirloom snowdrops. So I always say when I'm talking about planting bulbs, everybody should grow snowdrops. When we're talking about planting bulbs, and we've talked about this over the last few weeks, they go down 3 times as deep as the actual bulb. And so with a snowdrop, it's maybe, you know, a half inch is how big the bulb is. They don't have to go deep. They're tough as nails. The deer don't eat them. And they're one of the first things to bloom. And it's so exciting. I like to plant them close to the house. They get a little warmth from the house. And one of these heirloom snowdrops, they say, is even earlier than normal ones. So I'm obsessed with snowdrops. I grow all sorts of different snowdrops. I have some special snowdrops from people that I knew. It's just the start of the season for me. So I'm excited about those snowdrops. And then I was looking through to see what was on sale. When I was shopping for these, and there was like hundreds of bulbs on sale, I'm always looking down there for, they have them listed, 20% off, 30%, but I'm looking for 40 and 50. And this one type of crocus is supposed to be the most rodent resistant. And this is the Latin name, and I know I'm going to butcher it. Crocus thomasinianus. We just call them Tommies. And I love crocuses, but, they're always, they'll bloom, and then they'll be in the green, and that will out them for the chipmunks. So I'm going to try these Tommies. And I actually got a few tulips. The tulips, again, have to go in the vegetable garden because of the deer. The deer love tulips. But the little trick that I do for crocuses and tulips is I soak them in deer repellent for maybe a few minutes before I plant them. And that keeps them safe at least till the spring and maybe another season. And so we'll see how these Tommies do. And then I had to order some daffodils. Some of this stuff goes back to being introduced in the 1800s. It's just fun. So Again, all this information, anything I'm talking about at the top of the show here, it's all at DougOster.com. We do have a great guest coming up after the first break, and he's going to stick with us after the news break. Stephen Biggs, I call him the Fig Whisperer. He is the expert from Toronto. He wrote all these books about growing figs. Now, he also has a book about growing olives, too. We're going to talk all about what to do with our figs, how you could grow an olive tree. I'm going to have to try that. I didn't even know you could do that. So he'll be coming up soon. And I have an amazing event today for you, a fall gardening spectacular today at Hahn Nursery. That's in Ross. 2 o'clock, I'll be doing a little garlic planting seminar, and you're going to get a free head of garlic after I'm done talking to plant. And it's a variety I love. It's called Music. It's my favorite variety. It's big white cloves. And I also scraped up 5 free bird feeders to give away, too. These are from a company called Kohl's, and they probably sent them to me, I don't know, 5 years ago. They've been hanging up outside. I've got plenty of bird feeders. I want somebody to have these. This is kind of like a circular hanging feeder. You're welcome to have it. And if you do make the trip to Ross, there's a really cool thing, a dahlia open house today. A friend of mine, Amy Krutt, is a dahlia grower. I did a video on her, and even if you don't come out, her open house is from 10:30 to 1:30, so you could go see the dahlias and then come see me. It's just 3 sides of her house are just covered in dahlias, over 200 varieties of dahlias. I've got a video at my website. I've got all the information, her address. You should see this garden. And if you're coming, bring a vase, because if you do, she will cut some flowers for you. And again, this is late in the season for dahlias who can't stand any frost. So today, 2 o'clock, I will be at Hahn Nursery. Before that, go to the Dahlia Open House. And you can, again, all the stuff's at DougOster.com. I am continuing my free online garden classes on Wednesdays, 5 o'clock for Farm to Table, Buy Fresh, Buy Local. And, of course, this week it's all about garlic. I always, you know, I've got a bunch of authors coming up booked for the winter to talk about their books. But I was looking through my books, and I saw this one that I love that I don't think I could ever get rid of. It's called The Art of Gardening. And it was written by all the gardeners and staff at Chanticleer Garden, which is in Wayne, PA. If you ever go out to Longwood Gardens, stop at Chanticleer. It's one of my favorite places. The photography is all from my favorite garden photographer, Rob Cardillo, originally from Pittsburgh. And this book, boy, it's just filled with everything you need to know. If you're looking for like a gift for a gardener, The Art of Gardening is just a spectacular book. I just love it, and the photography is amazing. Also, a reminder to go to see Phipps Flower Show. It's called Rhythm and Blooms. I really loved it. It's something completely different and really cool, and I did a video there too. You can see that at the website if you can't get to Phipps, but you should go. It's amazing. One of the things about, and we had Laura Schock on, she designs the fall shows. One of the things that's so spectacular at the fall show are they're called disbuds, and that's this big, giant mum with just a one flower on it. So take a look at Phipps.
All right. Pet Fest 24, presented by Subaru, is back October 27th at Rockwell Park in the East End. The event runs from 9:30 in the morning until 4. Bring your four-legged friends to meet vendors, participate in costume contests, get photos with Santa, and join in the blessing of the pets at 9:30 a.m. Donation at the door benefits the Salvation Army. Pet Fest brought to you by Bully Max Dog Food and Forever Lawn. For more information, go to kdkradio.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
All right, we've got our guests ready to take to the airwaves, so let's get back to your host, the organic gardener, Doug Oster, DougOster.com.
Oh, I'm so excited to welcome my friend Stephen Biggs to the show. He is the author of Grow Figs Where You Think You Can't, Growing Figs in Cold Climates, 150 of Your Questions Answered, Grow Olives Where You Think You Can't, How to Grow an Olive Tree in a Pot. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Hey, Doug, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So we'll get to olives a little later, but you like to grow things that you can't.
I love it.
Why? You know what, Steve? I almost gave up on figs except for you. And because of you, I must have picked 150 figs this year. And I'm glad I didn't give up, but I was getting frustrated because I wasn't doing things the right way.
Mm-hmm. You know, I met a mentor along the way who showed me how he did it, how he made it easy. And I think that's the trick for any gardener is find an easy way to do it that fits into the way you garden.
So how many fig trees are you growing now and how are you growing them? Are they in the ground or in pots or both?
I have them in the ground and in pots. I have a bit of both. And so it drives my family crazy because the car never goes in the garage for the winter. The garage is full of fig trees and pots. And we have maybe about 20 plants these days. It's down from when I had 50 varieties. Again, my family said, what are you doing? This is crazy. But I had to try them all. And some of them I tip flat to the ground, these in-ground fig trees. I lay them flat to the ground and mulch them. And again, some of those ones are in the garage and pot. So I do a little bit of both.
So when you lay them down, is that a difficult process? And then what are you mulching them with?
What I do, so first thing I do before I lay them down is I tie the top fairly, I prune them, and I tie the top fairly tight. So it's a smaller bundle to tip over. And often I use a ratchet strap. And I'll put a ratchet strap around there and just gently tighten that up, get it nice and tight. And then what you have to do is dig the roots, dig around the tree about 180 degrees and dig away the roots. So you're just leaving a hinge of roots on the side that you're tipping to. And you feel kind of criminal doing this, chopping away all these roots, but it's just fine because these are pretty aggressive, fast-growing trees. And so once I got the roots chopped away on the one side, I tip that tree over. It's got the hinge of roots left on the side you're tipping to. And then I mulch it with straw. Now, this might even be overkill where you are, Doug, because you're warmer than me. So, but certainly that works really well for me here. And I keep those trees to about 8 feet. And in good years, I'm getting 100 or 200 figs off of those trees. So good way to do it.
Tell me a little bit about your fig masterclass that you have online.
Oh, I've had so much fun doing this. So I run both a live fig event once a year, and then for the rest of the year, I've got this fig masterclass, which is where I work people through how to grow figs. So everything you need to know about growing a fig tree in a cold climate, from picking a variety to summer care to getting it through winter, that's the big question. And work through all of these different challenges, because here's the key thing I like to help people understand is there's so many ways that you can do this. There's so many ways to successfully grow and harvest figs in a cold climate. And the key is to pick a way that works in your garden that's the least amount of work for you.
So I want your opinion on this because I've used your technique and I'm doing that same thing when I'm pushing that tree to the ground. Actually, I have two trees in there now, and then I'm wrapping it up, like you say, but I never thought of a ratchet strap. That's a great idea. But then on top of mine are bags of compost, like 10 bags of compost, maybe more, that then I can use in the spring. And since I've covered them with that compost, I've been getting figs like crazy. And I know you say that your family is like, what are you doing? But when you get the figs... This is amazing when you get the figs. There's nothing like that fig. And believe it or not, even Now I'm still picking figs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for people who haven't had a fresh fig, sometimes I don't even know where to begin describing it. But let's say melt in your mouth, super sweet. Some varieties, though, they're fruity too. And almost like a packet of jam, really. Is that how you'd describe it?
Exactly. You know, I've had some guys working on the house and I brought them back in the garden and I said, hey, try this. And the funny thing is, the guy was growing figs, but he was just like, well, I never get any figs. And I said, what are you doing with it? He goes, it's right next to the house. I said, are you covering it or wrapping it or burying it? He's like, nah. I said, you got to do that. You know, you got to do that to get the figs. So if I was to go out and go to the nursery today, what kind of fig should I buy, Steve? The Chicago Hardy, okay? Or what are some of your favorites?
So Chicago Hardy is widely available, and it's good if you're planning to grow it in the ground where hardiness matters outside, then it's always a good call. And it's a nice, smaller, dark fig, beautiful flavor. If you're growing it in pots and putting those somewhere protected, like for me, I've got an insulated garage, the pots go in there, then hardiness doesn't matter. So the variety you choose will depend partly what you're doing. But here, I like to tell people, get a fig variety that gives you an early crop, because a fig will actually make some fruit on last year's new growth, some fruit on this year's growth. And that fruit on last year's growth comes here, it's July. So you get those early figs, get a variety that gives you lots of those. And the gold standard for those early figs is a variety called Desert King. Desert King, you got to get Desert King.
Mm. I think one year I had a fig in a pot and I left it in the unheated greenhouse all winter and I got that early crop. And I don't remember the variety, but then I ended up killing it, Steve. I don't know what I did wrong. But I got I got that early crop, which is important.
Yeah.
Why do you think people are so infatuated with growing figs like me? You know, I think you have to have a reason to grow figs because you have to work so hard at it.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a whole cultural thing because a lot of people come from parts of the world where figs grow. And I think of the Mediterranean basin. So whether it's North Africa, the Mideast, Southern Europe, figs all around there. So there's cultural significance for people too. And of course, this is also a fruit that's in the Bible. So there's also that influence as well. And then there's the whole aspect of it just being a little bit exotic. So for geeks like me, being able to grow something exotic in a cold climate, that's really fun.
All right, Steve, hang in there. We'll bring you back after the break and we'll talk a little bit about how to grow olives, which I'm interested in.
Coming back with more right after this. I was out there the other day, Pumpkinland in full swing. Absolutely beautiful. Get out there. Pumpkinland opens at 10 a.m. today. Sundays are always a good fun day for families at Janoski. So if you're the 10th caller, 412-922-1020, you're going to win a $25 gift certificate from Janoski's in Clinton. And now here he is, Doug Oster.
Back with my friend Stephen Biggs from Toronto. He has written two books on figs, but also a book called Grow Olives Where You Think You Can't. How did this begin, Steve?
Gosh, well, you know, it started with an empty suitcase when I flew out to visit a nursery out in Vancouver. And I went out there knowing they had lots of cool plants. And I came home with a new olive tree and I started getting olives. And I got pretty excited about that because I'd been growing olives for years and never got olives, didn't know what to do. So it started with an empty suitcase.
So you're having a live olive camp, right, coming up?
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a live olive camp. It's two nights this coming week, Monday and Thursday, talking all about growing olives in cold climates. That can be a potted olive tree. But sometimes in borderline climates, people will do neat things with olives too, like grow them flat against a wall and put Christmas lights on them to give them a bit of extra heat for the winter.
When you get the olives, how many olives do you get and what do you do with them?
So I've got 3 6-foot-high olive trees, 6 feet, because then I can fit them through a doorway. And I get a big mixing bowl full of olives every year. So I've got to set the expectation. You're not getting bushels of olives. Mm-hmm. But what I do is I brine them. So I slit the olives. This is one way to do it. Slit them with a knife, put them in brine, and then that brine soaks in and takes out the bitterness. If anybody in here is has grown up in an olive area, you'll know that if you bite into an uncured olive, it has got so much bitterness in there, you'll pucker right up. So you got to cure your olives first, and that's what I do.
And where do they go for the winter in those potted olives up in Toronto?
There's different options. So some people treat them like a house plant. I keep mine in a cold greenhouse. If you have a sunroom, if you have a breezeway, even a dark garage that stays just around freezing is just fine. But the big thing I want everybody to know about olives, if you don't give them a chill in the wintertime, you won't get any blooms. No blooms means no olives. So they need a winter chill. And a winter chill, it depends what variety you're growing, but to simplify it, you could say you want at least a couple weeks down close to the freezing mark, just above freezing. And that's what actually causes them to bloom.
And can they take below freezing or not?
Yeah, they can. So if you've got an in-ground tree, a big old olive tree growing in the ground, it can go down to, you know, 15 Fahrenheit or probably colder. But if you're growing it in a pot, the thing to remember is that anything we grow in a pot can never take as much cold as something that's in the ground. So my recommendation is if you have a potted olive, keep it just around the freezing mark, maybe a tiny bit above that for winter. And that's a safer spot. If you're going to all this trouble to grow it, be safe with it.
I wonder if I could get away in the unheated greenhouse with that. Is it, you know, when it gets cold, it gets cold in there. It's an old greenhouse, single pane glass. But I'm really intrigued, Steve, since I'm doing the figs, olives, you know, the reason I grow the figs is my wife's cousin in Italy, when we visited him years and years ago, he had fig trees just, you know, growing along the hillside, looking out at the Mediterranean. And my wife was like, gosh, can we grow them? And I'm like, somehow, some way, I'll figure it out. I didn't figure it out. Oh, you figured it out for me.
Okay, well, here's a thought for you. If you have an unheated greenhouse that maybe gets too cold, even though your olive tree is evergreen, that means it keeps its leaves through the winter. When it's really cold, it's not growing. So it doesn't matter if it's dark. What if you tipped your potted olive tree flat to the ground in the greenhouse and then put some old carpet or something over it to insulate it?
Oh, that sounds good. Where would one find an olive tree? I've never seen one at a local nursery.
Yeah, okay, so let me back up one step. If you're thinking about getting an olive tree, there's one key thing you got to know, is that some varieties, you need two different olive varieties to get fruit. But there's some olives that are what's called self-fruitful. It means if you only have one plant, you'll still get olives. So make sure if you're getting one tree, get a self-fruitful olive. And the most well-known variety that I've seen is called Frantoio, but there are others. And if you're not finding them in the local garden center, there are places online that specialize in exotic fruit. And you want to go to one of those.
So tell us about your website, because when I looked on the website, one thing that I didn't think about also is that olive trees, you say, are beautiful.
Oh, they're gorgeous. So for people who haven't seen an olive tree, there's a silvery color on the leaf underside. And when the wind moves through them, those trees actually shimmer and you get this beautiful movement in the garden. So they're just a fantastic potted plant, both for the olives, but for this element of light and movement that they can add to a garden. So a potted olive tree, just stunningly beautiful.
And what's the website where we could get the information on the live olive camp, on the fig masterclass?
Yeah, foodgardenlife.com is the website, foodgardenlife.com. It's all there, and email me if you've got a question. There's an email option on the website if you have questions about what I've said online here.
And I have links to that also at DougOster.com, but we're not done. We've talked about figs. Mm. We've talked about olives. But you actually have a lemon masterclass I saw on your website.
Yeah, I've got lemons too. And like the figs, once a year I do it live. But like I said, Doug, I'm kind of crazy for these things I'm not supposed to grow. So lemons fit in there. Like the olives, these are just an amazing potted patio plant because you get fruit, but you've got, with lemons, you've got fragrant flowers. And then the added bonus is that you can actually cook with lemon leaves. You can use them a bit like a bay leaf, or you can wrap them around something you're grilling on the barbecue. You get an awesome lemony flavor. So I can't say enough about lemons.
And are you getting big lemons too?
Oh yeah, lemons galore. And we grow the regular supermarket type of lemon, but we also grow lots of what's called the Meyer lemon. People might have seen it at the store, thin skin. It's got a different flavor from the regular supermarket lemons. Both, like your olives, these are things that take more cold than people realize, just below the freezing mark. But again, don't push it with a potted plant. Keep it just above freezing to be safe. But they take cold, so it means you don't need a hot greenhouse to keep these through the winter. You can keep them in a breezeway or a sunroom. A friend of mine has a cold room in her attic where she puts her lemon for the winter. And I used to drive my family crazy because in our old house, we had this cold bathroom in the basement, and I'd shut off the water and I'd pack it full of all my cold loving plants, like my olives and figs and lemons. So, you know, look around your house. A lot of people will, without thinking about it, will have a space where they can keep these plants through the winter.
Tell me about your family's reaction to having those lemons. I mean, geez, figs, olives, and lemons. This is, they've got to appreciate this, right?
They love it. They love it. So some of the things we do is, one of their favorites is to get one of these grilling cheeses, like a Greek saganaki or a Lebanese halloumi cheese, wrap it in a lemon leaf. I grill it on the barbecue. They go crazy for that. You don't actually eat the leaf, but it imparts flavor into the cheese. We eat fresh figs. They all love that. In fact, we all try to sneak out to the fig patch first to get the most figs. And in addition to lemon, if you're into citrus, you can do other fun things too. There's the yuzu, which is a related citrus that's got this most amazing floral fragrance that comes from the rind. So we create sauces and marinades with those. So a lot of fun, a lot of fun.
All right, Steve, I appreciate you getting up early up there in Toronto and calling in. I hope to see you sometime back up in there, Toronto. We visited each other a few years ago, and I want to get back up there because Steve's a Renaissance man, a gardener, a musician, and a great fisherman, too.
All right.
Outdoors man.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate the call. So the most famous song ever written about a lemon tree was performed by, before you give the answer, I know you know it, my all-time favorite great guitarist, but he starred in Dirty Dozen, had a bit scene in Ocean's 11, hung out with the Rat Pack, and that answer is, you know who it is.
I don't know who it is.
Trini Lopez.
Oh, Trini Lopez.
Lemon Tree, great song.
You know, he's got his own special type of guitar out there.
Yeah, what has. Like a big thing, like an old Joe Negri type of guitar.
Not quite that big, no. But gosh, I can't, who's the guy from Foo Fighters? I can't remember his name.
Oh, yeah, the drummer who was in Nirvana.
Yeah, he plays a Trini Lopez guitar.
Trini Lopez was great. All right, we'll take a short break. We'll come back. We want to talk to you about gardening. Get on the line, 866-391-1020. We don't need Google for Doug's listeners. They get a hold of him right away.
My friend Randy McManus, who I hope to see today, he told me he's gonna stop by Han today to get the garlic at 2:00. He tells me that Dave Grohl, I couldn't remember. I'm getting too old. These names just go away in
Food
in my
Fighters.
Head. Yep.
And Nirvana, and two guitars were designed by Trini Lopez for Gibson. They're now collector items. And Trini died in 2020, but man, he was a giant talent. All right, let's go to Cheryl Mount Washington. You're on KDKA and, of course, the Organic Gardener Show. Hey, Cheryl.
Hey, thank you for taking the call. I have a large strawberry patch, and it produces really well, but I need to move it to another area so I can start growing my zucchini and tomatoes and whatnot there. And it's kind of too wide to get in it and pick the strawberry. So when's a good time to transplant the strawberry plants?
You could do it now if you were so inclined, but you'd want to do it pretty quick.
Okay.
Get some good compost, either by the bag or by the truckload, however you can get it up there, and improve whatever this area is going to be that you're going to put the strawberries in with, mm-hmm. with the compost. And then move those plants over. You want that bed to be all ready first. You don't want them to be mm-hmm. out of the ground long. You'll put them into that compost, water them right away, and then also when you have them in that state, mulch them with some straw all around it. So when they sprout next year, they'll just grow on top of the straw. You won't have quite as much slug damage.
I have another question. I used straw in my vegetable garden, and whatever was in that straw, it really ruined my garden. I've been listening to you for years. I laid her in that, and it was wonderful. In the last 2 years, when I put the straw on, and I got it from a nursery, it just got hard as a rock. I was surprised, and that's why I'm moving it. Actually, moving it where I had two compost bins, so I can make it like not as wide, so I can pick them easier.
So tell me again. Tell me again what happened with the straw.
Well, the straw evidently had something in it, because when I always put the newspapers in that down, like mm-hmm. you talk about with Jessica. And so I decided to put straw on 2 years ago, and my vegetable garden totally, it got as hard as a rock. Mm. It didn't produce, and I was not doing anything different than putting on the straw.
Mm. Because I put straw on everything. I wonder if that was just a bad bale or something.
And where's the best? I mean, I usually go to Janowski's, you know, because it's closer to me and whatnot. But that's not where I got the straw that time.
Okay. Yeah.
What do you do with the runners? Are you supposed to snip the runners off?
You want to actually perpetuate those runners, because the mother plant will eventually get tired, and you want the runners to take over.
So I take the whole plant, with the runners on it then, and transplant it.
Yeah. And then once those runners get going, eventually you'll discard the mother plant and go to Janowski's for your straw.
Okay. Thanks again. I love your show.
Thanks for listening.
All right. Only because I don't like to leave anybody hanging.
Okay.
Kay, I got 1 minute, so it's all yours.
All right, Kay.
Okay. Coxcombs. They're the gorgeous flowers, and they're annuals, and they're easy to take care of. You don't have to water them much, and I just think you should promote them so much. It's a gorgeous flower.
I agree. That is a wonderful one. I was out at the Pittsburgh Botanic Garden and saw some of those coxcombs out there, and that is one of the fall plants that you'll find at nurseries right now, because they take a little bit of cold, too. Now, come join me today at Han Nursery, 2 o'clock. I'm giving you free garlic after a little garlic presentation. There's also something, an open house around Han, my friend that has the dahlias. Next week, Teresa Watkins is our guest, author of 3 volumes of A Gardener's Compendium. And as I said, I'll be at Han today. We're going to have a lot of fun. Garlic is life. Garlic is love. Garlic is everything.
It's a double H day for you. Han's
right.
And Howes.
Yeah, Han's and Howes. Right. That's right.
That sounds like a neat look. But I just really want to say, and I mentioned this to my audience earlier today, I was interviewing Pat Carey, the North Hills coach, the other day. So I was in your stomping grounds and saw the beautiful Han's Nursery. That's a really neat, cool place outside the city of Pittsburgh.
Oh, definitely. You know, people often ask me, why are you always doing something at Han? Well, it's 2 miles from the house. I always say the best nursery is your closest nursery, but then you got to cross some rivers too and check out some place, because every nursery has something special, something unique. And I've been working with Han for 25 years now, and so it's a lot of fun.
Same family. Good stuff. Okay, stay with us. News at 8.